Hey everyone, and welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music record label. Today I get to have my good friend who's done a lot of mixing work for us in the past, Tim Felton from San Diego, to talk about his record Building Bridges with the Shorefire Soul Ensemble, fresh off their San Diego Music Awards win. It's a number one Billboarding debut album. Please help me welcome Tim Felton.
This is Cliff.
Yes. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm well, thank you. So I wanted to reach out. Glad we were able to actually take time to bring you on the podcast and have you chat with us. I saw that you guys had just won the San Diego Music Award, so that was super exciting. I listened to some of your other older records that we're getting into as well. Yeah, it was exciting. I didn't know. I went to your website that Building Bridges also debuted on Billboard number one.
Yeah.
Which is amazing for an independent album, and obviously with Coal Mine, but just in general, I mean, that's not a easy feat. So congratulations to that. I just wanted to wrap my head around how this album came to be, who worked on it, and kind of what the differences are between some of your other records that you put out before.
Sure. Well, I guess the main difference between this and the previous two is we had a couple personnel changes. We have different drummer and bassist. We brought in drummer Jake Nager, who's been playing all over California for like 20 years, and bassist Omar Lopez. So they were new additions. And then we also added trombone player Willie Fleming.
So I guess to backtrack, what's your normal instrumentation just overall for the group, for Shorefire Soul Ensemble?
The drums, bass, guitar, keys, two percussionists, and three horns.
So with the songs and everything that was on Building Bridges, like what was your kind of process of just creating the album?
Well, it usually happens, in rehearsals and at jam sessions. We host these various jam sessions around town, and usually the songs start to take shape there. We'll play them out, and usually how we develop the material, kind of live test it in front of an audience and with other musicians. Some of these songs, it actually took a while to get them onto record and released. And we had been working on them with even older members who had been in the band. So it just, it took a while. You know how it is.
I definitely do. And you record everything yourself, correct?
Yeah.
So I had spoken on an earlier podcast with Sergio Rio from Ogrón, who we worked with before. And,
nice.
I think sometimes when you're recording yourself, it can be good, but it can also be difficult because you kind of have to be the one that, says when to stick a fork in it, and when it's done, sometimes the process can be a little longer.
Yeah, that's true. Your ears start to get used to the way it's sounding. So you really have to be careful to take a break and try and come back and listen to it with a fresh perspective, so you don't make judgment mistakes, or like you were saying, just work on it way too long.
Yeah. So then when we talk about, some of these accolades and how you created the record, I mean, how did you build up to be able to debut on Billboard or to win this San Diego Music Award? Like, what kind of trajectory of like where you started only really a few years ago into where you are now based on this record?
Coal Mine has really helped out a lot as far as, I'd say that they're the main reason that we debuted on Billboard, just their label growing, other artists who have attracted more attention to the label, like Duran Jones and the Indications. They put the label in the national spotlight more so than it was with like articles in Rolling Stone and whatnot. So being with that label definitely helped with the Billboard accolades. As far as San Diego Music Awards, this is actually every album has won a San Diego Music Award. So we're pretty grateful to be honored like that locally.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not easy to get respect, in your home base. So that's always good that exists. And it's there. So, yeah, definitely love Terry and the crew all over at Coal Mine. And they've done so many great records with Orgone and Neil Francis and the Duran Jones stuff, and God, so many, it could be Sick Down and so many other great groups, including yourself. And so you worked with label mate Kelly Finnegan on a few different tracks. The first one I had heard is The Message from the Meters, which has almost a million streams on Spotify. Would you say that The Meters is a huge influence on the band? And what are some of your other influences?
Yeah, for me personally, yeah, definitely The Meters is a huge influence. Obviously, we have a larger ensemble and more thicker instrumentation than The Meters. The thing that's great about The Meters is it's and like Booker T and the MGs, they're just like a four piece. I guess as far as some of our other influences, it would be, you know, of course, James Brown. No one that plays funk or soul cannot mention James Brown and his contribution. Isaac Hayes, Curtis Mayfield, Fela Kuti.
Oh yeah, I mean all pioneers, all legends in their own right. And I don't know, I love that time period of music as far as originality in terms of just sheer showmanship. I mean, there weren't a lot of tools and tricks. You know, there was no auto-tune. You really had to be good and know your stuff. But I think also back then in the 70s, particularly 60s and 70s, you know, count the Motown era and stuff too, they really praised originality. They really praised like everyone having a different and unique sound. And I feel like now music has become much more ubiquitous, especially in the pop world, where I think it's more of now people come and say, oh, this record really sounds great. Go make 10 more records just like this, where that didn't happen before.
Right.
And so it's always great, you know, to have groups like yourself that I feel are very original and sticking very true. So do you feel like because of those influences, do you approach the recording process, the types of gear that you're using, like based on that vintage vibe as well?
Definitely, for the most part. I mean, I'm not going to shy away from using Pro Tools, though, especially for mixing. It's way easier, you know, for what I have. I'm just doing it out of my bedroom pretty much as far as the control room of the studio here. So I don't have a big mixing console, and I don't have like a mixed down tape deck or anything like that, but we do definitely use analog gear on the front end, the Tascam 388, which I'm sure Sergio, if you talked about gear with him, I'm sure he mentioned the Tascam 388. He uses it as well, as does Kelly Finnegan and all kinds of people. It's a great tape machine. But yeah, it's kind of a mixture of the vintage approach with some modern tools.
No, I definitely hear you on the hybrid model, especially when it comes to mixing. I mean, if you've ever seen vintage footage of how they used to cut and actually edit tape and how they cut the tape and taped it together and would splice that, I don't know if it's
right.
A documentary, but I remember like all of the overdubs for Queen Bohemian Rhapsody, like the tape was so thin that they were afraid to move it to be able to transfer it, I guess, onto vinyl because it was just so fragile in that medium. And the same goes for I think Doobie Brothers, when they were doing What a Fool Believes, they had, you know, the editor had to cut the tape and to make the take the way they wanted because they didn't have actually one full take. It was the way that they wanted and they didn't actually like it. So the editor had to actually physically go in and slice it. And I saw when I was at school at Berkeley, they would show us like how they did that. But I mean, remarkably, Pro Tools has been a game changer for the industry as far as people being able to mix, especially being able to mix in the box. Versus having all of the outboard gear, so I think that's very cool.
Yeah, the editing alone is just incredible. Like you're saying, the difference between cutting tape and just having it on the screen and being able to loop stuff and, you know, do infinite takes if you want to.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you definitely have digitally you have the options of doing you know, more takes. But do you find that you guys are usually pretty well rehearsed? That you're looking to try to lay down as much into a solid take as possible versus having to do like a lot of editing?
That's usually the approach. So, I mean, sometimes we'll write some songs on the spot and those ones will end up getting chopped up a little bit more. But yeah, for the most part, that is the approach. Write the song, test it out live, and then record it when it's well rehearsed.
So then as we backtrack to your catalog, you've done a few albums. I've seen you've done 4 45s and 2 LPs. Having that under your belt, including this last record, do you have a phase? And then where are you guys planning to go musically next after this album?
Do I have a favorite? I mean, I think the newest album is my favorite. And we've got our version of Impeach the President with Kelly Finnegan coming out probably in October. So that was another favorite that we did as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I saw that, you teamed up against with Kelly. Love his stuff, love his solo work. You covered Honey Drippers, 1973 anti-Nixon political funk tune, Impeach the President. Do you guys usually kind of slant towards the political arena, or was just kind of the, you're trying to speak more to the times by reinventing the song, reimagining it?
Well, I guess it was just it's pretty much the perfect opportunity. That's an awesome song with an awesome drum break. And Jake is the kind of drummer that can really make that shine. Yeah, I mean, I feel like with everything that's been happening in the last 4 years, you kind of have to speak out. And as an instrumental group, it's hard for us to do that. I mean, besides like what I can say at shows and the names of our songs. So we'd been performing it live with our trombone player singing it. And Terry heard it and he said, why don't you get Kelly to sing that? And I love the way it turned out.
That's cool. It's nice to be able to have that kind of arsenal of other people to connect within a label situation to work with other people. And it just kind of adds, since you guys are already doing so many cool things, I think I find a lot of the time combining groups can be very, very essential, not just to the marketing of it, but, just to get fresh perspectives on it.
Definitely. I agree.
So I wanted to kind of talk about your mixture of vintage with digital as it comes to Spotify and streaming services. So I saw we're both, our bands are both featured on the Spotify All Funked Up and Funk Drive playlist. You actually mixed my song Confident, which features your new guitar player, Lito Magana from Mestizo Beat, who is featured on the record. You've also mixed their upcoming album for California Soul Music, which sponsors the podcast. That's super exciting for all of us. And then I think one of the instrumentals for their playlist just got on the instrumental funk playlist for Canoga Madness. So congrats for that. I mean, thanks for all your work on that. But how do you feel about Spotify and particularly these playlists as far as you reaching and amplifying to an audience, that may not necessarily be audiophiles on vinyl, but still hip to the music because they're able to consume it in a different way in the digital media and the streaming?
Sure. That's what I think for me. I guess I'm kind of a Luddite in my opinion here, but for me, I guess I consider that Spotify is the new radio. It's mainly for, as far as what I consider purposes, to be advertising and gaining new listeners. It doesn't pay a lot of money, but I guess it's better than paying money to advertise. so yeah, it attracts new listeners, but I come from working in radio, so I'm a bit sad to see that medium kind of go away and be replaced by automated playlists. Even though they are curated by someone, there's no personality like what you would have with KEXP or KCRW with someone on the air live in the chair playing music. You know, it just loses a little bit of its community feeling to me. But like you said, I do think it is good for advertising and attracting new listeners.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're coming from a radio background. I saw when the group was kind of first starting back in 2016, you were prominently featured on the legendary alternative rock station 91X in San Diego as Artist of the Month. And did you feel like that kind of helped you gain some more exposure during those earlier years?
Well, I worked for the NPR affiliate here in San Diego, KPBS. So they were real kind to us. They had us in to perform and did interviews each time we released an album. So that was pretty nice. And I work on a radio show and podcast called Away with Words, which is on NPR stations across the country. So I have experience with that and a lot of love for radio as a medium.
Oh, wow. Well, I have to definitely check out that podcast. I haven't heard it, but Away with Words, NPR, I feel like we can check it out. That'll be very, very cool. Always happy to support and to be able to listen to other content. There's so much kind of out there now. And you guys, before in a pre-COVID world, you were touring a lot all over the West Coast. You had residencies, obviously, in San Diego. You also had a lot of shows at the Boom Boom Room in San Francisco. And so kind of how is the band live versus in studio? What could fans or lovers of this music expect from a live show?
I guess as far as a live show, we add more soloing and we add and kind of stretch the songs out a little bit, and then we add vocals as well. So we do 5 or 6 cover songs, vocal tunes over the course of a set, depending on how long we play. At a venue like Winston's in Ocean Beach, we'll play up to 2 hours. Somewhere like the Casbah, it's more like 90 minutes. But you know, nine-piece band on stage, and we just, you know, pass solos around and try and mix it up, try and be dynamic, you know, slow songs, fast songs. Some songs have long solos, some songs just kind of more straightforward.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I mean, that's what you would expect, especially from a funk band, more of a jam extended part for live. I love that. Some of my most favorite records are live records. One of my all-time favorites being James Brown, Love, Power, Peace, the live at the Olympia in 1971 in Paris. Do you feel that your band will, I don't know if you have, have you cut a live record or are you planning to?
Yeah, we've cut a live record and it's been mixed and we're just waiting for art and mastering from Coal Mine. It's been approved. So next year, maybe. But yeah, it's we recorded it down here. We're hosting these every 2 week jam sessions at a beautiful venue in Balboa Park called Panama 66. And on Mother's Day last year, in 2019, we cut a live record with video too.
Oh wow! So will they be doing kind of a bundle? Will there be video content coming out, or I don't know if people still do DVDs, but somehow to be able to stream it. And the audio and video?
There's going to be a series of videos. It's not going to be like a complete package of the whole recording. What we did was we played 2 sets of our 1 set of music. So we basically played our 12 songs twice so we could have two takes. Because, you know, usually when bands make a live album, they do it over a series of a few nights. And they'll have a few different takes to choose from. So we did, since we didn't have that option, we just played the same set back to back twice.
Live to me is always fun. It's just like a kinetic energy, especially having everybody all at once playing, then having to do it kind of in sections depending on studio space and other stuff like that. So being the organist of the group, kind of what are your kind of organ influences and kind of what are your actual like origins or beginnings? What's your origin story?
My first keyboard influence was Money Mark of the Beastie Boys.
Nice. That's an interesting first person, but I could see how that could happen based on the timeline of when you were growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in the LA suburbs, and I heard So What You Want. And I guess before that, I was taking classical piano lessons, so I was more of just learning the math and theory of it all, but I didn't really have like much of an artistic approach because I was like, you know, 9 to 12 or 7 to 12 years old. So then when I was 11, I heard Money Mark of the Beastie Boys and I was like, what is that? What is that organ sound with the scrambled sound, you know, the sound of the Leslie speaker going on fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of captured my imagination, and then, you know, digging into some of the Beastie Boys albums in middle school and high school, heard the Wurlitzer electric piano and the clavinet, and then of course on Money Mark's solo record, Mark's Keyboard Repair, there's like a bunch of different synths and other organs that he's playing on there, so that kind of really grabbed a hold of me. And then hearing San Diego group the Grey Boy All-Stars and then DJ Grey Boy, kind of the acid jazz that he was producing. And then that was kind of my bridge into the older music, you know, through the Beastie Boys root down, discovering Jimmy Smith, and then through other hip hop like Wu-Tang Clan and Tribe Called Quest and the Far Side, kind of going back and seeing where those samples came from, introducing to a lot of soul jazz stuff, especially with the tribe music, some Lonnie Smith samples, Reuben Wilson, other stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's very interesting. I always tell my students and other people, you have to kind of go back through the samples, through the influences as far back in the musical timeline as you can, because, it, you know, if you listen to just what it is in the sample now, you're only getting just a snippet, really, of like a full song and so many tone colors and other things. But I definitely have respect for the history of the music, respect for the Beastie Boys especially. They did an album where they actually went and learned instruments and started playing kind of the stuff that they were doing. And I thought that was cool in the hip-hop realm to be able to take the time to actually become quote-unquote musicians from rappers. So I thought that was very interesting. I definitely grew up around that same time period and remember just a lot of the hip-hop that was coming out. And for me, the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. And yes, I dig the crates and everything to kind of hear the original samples. At least now with digital, we can, you know, at our fingertips find who samples who and listen to the originals. Before, I mean, when I was studying music in the late 90s, early 2000s, you had to kind of go to like a library to listen to stuff. It was like, I think Napster was kind of just starting, but it was a while before we would have YouTube and other things that we could just pull it up. But I think it's right. A lot easier for people to understand and find these things now.
Yeah, I definitely put in a lot of work in various thrift stores and record stores, buying records based on the cover, because, you know, there wasn't like, especially at a thrift store, there's not a listening station or anything. So you just see if you like the cover, and then from buying other records, you start to see the musicians that are credited on some of these albums. And then you're like, all right, well, he sounds great on this album. Let's check it out. And then you learn, like, as far as what your tastes are, like what years the albums are released. You know, for me, that would have been like 68 to 73 or 74, as far as like the stuff I was into.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think most of the audio files still dig through crates. I just got some really rare 45 gospel records that some random record store in Chicago on Instagram was selling. And I was like, that sounds interesting. I've never heard of this group. And they were cool. They were different. And I guess someone had passed away and their estate kind of sold the box of these finals that had never been played.
Okay.
So always interesting to kind of have those types of moments. So getting back to your collaborations, so you collaborated twice with Kelly. Are there more collaborations kind of coming down the pipeline? Is there anyone that you have not worked with yet that you would like to, either on your label or anywhere, really, just to kind of add to the arsenal of guests or features? I don't know if that's something that Surefire Soul Ensemble looks to have, you know, more vocal features or other instrumental features, but I just was wondering if that was kind of part of what you're thinking about going forward into the future.
It hasn't really been that much. I mean, of course, there's like various side projects and whatnot. That's probably where more, you know, there's going to be more collaboration outside of the group. But I think, yeah, as far as like working with other vocalists, MCs, that's always been, you know, because as I was talking about, you know, coming into funk and soul through hip hop, you know, I'm a huge hip hop fan, especially of the style that was born in the early 90s. But yeah, working with some of those MCs from that era and other people that are kind of carrying on the tradition of hip hop music from that period, I think that's an area where we might explore.
Nice. Yeah, you should definitely check out one of my friends' groups called the Urban Renewal Project. A lot of my
okay.
own players play on that, and they have a good mix of vocals and rappers with the big band funk soul ensemble. I think they have a 15-piece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Exciting. But, yeah, I think that'd be cool. I would love to hear your stuff with a rapper. I'd love to hear your stuff sampled. I think, yeah, you got some great breaks and other stuff in there that could be really cool. And I think, you know, many people could discover you through many different avenues. A lot of people are putting a lot of that kind of funk soul stuff into sample libraries and other stuff like that to kind of get more of it out. I don't know if you guys would do that, but that's just what I've been hearing around from other engineers, that they're saying that's kind of a new, kind of like licensing is like a new extension of your music that people are looking into now.
Right. Yeah. Terry Cole mentioned doing that, and I was supposed to be sending him stems, but I haven't gotten on it yet. So, but yeah, that's another avenue that we will be exploring.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to that. What is some advice that you would give as we start to wrap up? What is some advice that you would give to someone that was just starting out, either starting out playing keys or start wanting to start their own band, or someone starting out recording and engineering? Like, what kind of advice would you give someone that was like a newbie?
I guess I would say put in the time to study your heroes, people that move you the most. If it's an organ player or a piano player, learn their songs, like really learn their songs, learn all the licks, you know, basically get inside their head. As far as recording, being a recording engineer, just talk to your favorite engineers. They're all probably really down to earth people. Most people are down to share the knowledge. Yeah, I would just say don't be standoffish as far as like trying to meet other people inside the music scene and other musicians. Everyone's really, really nice.
So yeah, I think that's definitely well put and well said and really good advice. So for my last question, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want to most be remembered for?
Man, that's such a hard question for anyone. Especially for someone like myself that's really kind of honoring and heavily influenced by music that's from outside of our time period. I don't know. I would hope that I was able to pay respect and take the music to new places. I think that's all anyone can really ask for, as far as even any artist, that they pay honorable tribute to their influences and take the art form, you know, in a unique way that is their own.
I think that's definitely the only way to do it. I think that's a great legacy, and I'm sure that you are already doing it and will continue to do that. The future is too far ahead to see, but it sounds like there's some really great records coming down the pipeline. I look forward to the Impeach the President when it comes out later this year, and I look forward to that live album sometime next year. So we'll definitely circle back to you once this is out in season 2 of the podcast, so that you have all the links and can listen to it. But we thank you again, Tim, for all the work you've done for us and just being a really great guy. And we really love the Surefire Soul Ensemble and the group and Coal Mine, and wish all of you the best in the future. And if there's any way that we can help or collaborate in any way, we're most certainly happy to do that. Hopefully we'll be talking to you about more projects as they come in the future as well.
Yeah, Cliff, I really appreciate you having me on. These are all really, really thoughtful questions here. And yeah, definitely excited to work with California Soul Music and, you know, your music. And I appreciate the love here.
Awesome. The love is mutual, my friend. Much respect to you. You know, definitely we'll be keeping in touch, and I will talk to you soon.
Cool. Sounds good.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. You've just listened to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I would like to thank the very fun, very funky Tim Felton for coming on the program today to talk about their Coal Mine Records number one Billboard debut album, Building Bridges, fresh off their San Diego Music Awards win. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording. If you like this recording and you want to hear more, you can visit us online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until then, take care and stay funky.